The time has arrived. We'll call a meeting of the House Agriculture and Rural Development Policy and Finance Committee to order. And welcome to all of our guests this morning, a special day here at the Capitol, Dairy Day at the Capitol. And also today we're going to be really focusing on ag literacy, a big concern for those of us involved in agriculture. See a lot of blue jackets over on the on my right side. Could you quickly stand up and tell us what schools you represent here this morning? And thank you for coming. Thank you much and welcome to our Ag Committee this morning. We will wait to quantify the minutes from our last meeting until we have a quorum, at which time Joan will tell us when we have a quorum. First up this morning to testify, Ag Literacy, Julie Tesh, the Executive Director of MALC, an outstanding program. Julie, identify yourself for the record and you can take it away.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Julie Tesh, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, otherwise referred to as MALC. That's how we'll be referring to it from now on, because it's kind of a mouthful to say. Thank you for inviting us here today to discuss the importance of agricultural literacy and education. All too often, we take for granted our abundant food supply and don't give the proper respect to the people who produce our food. We also fail to realize that the general public is so far removed from agriculture that they do not understand where their food comes from. Many people might view agricultural literacy as fluff, but we are here to tell you that the time is now to make sure that we have an educated public who understands and respects agriculture. We have a hungry planet to feed, and education in and about agriculture is vitally important. Today, MALC is proud to bring you some of Minnesota's best and brightest teachers, students, and organizations who work with agricultural literacy. We have representatives from Minnesota FFA who have introduced themselves already, the University of Minnesota Agricultural Education Club, Morris Area High School, Sibley East High School, Brainerd High School, and we also have Minnesota Ag in the Classroom and Farm America. But first, to put agriculture in its proper perspective, I would like to show you this quick little video that hopefully works. And if not, we'll just move on. Oop, there we go.
We'll be right back.
to wake you up this morning, give you some food for thought for the morning. So the reason I showed you that is we showed that actually at our Agricultural Education Summit in December that we had close to 200 people. You all remember the wonderful blizzard we had in December, and even though we had that blizzard, we ended up with almost 200 people at our summit that Monday talking about agricultural education, and Representative Anderson was there and many of the other committee members. And that video really caught on with people because it talks about agriculture, the importance of agriculture, but also the importance of education and letting people know how important agriculture is to our society. So I just want to give you a brief overview before I introduce our guests today about Minnesota agricultural education statistics. And you'll notice that we're going to start referring to agricultural education as agriculture, food, and natural resources education. We teach all of these things in our classes, and so we feel that, saying ag, food, and natural resource education is the proper way of titling it. We have 20,000 estimated total 9 through 12 enrollment in secondary ag education. More and more, we are going into grades 7 and 8 in our schools. And the reason we can do that is because, one, there's a need, there's a demand, and also we're able to offer science and economics credit as well for a lot of our high-level ag or science classes. Our FFA membership, who you'll hear from today, they have over 9,000 members. And you can see here in 2010 and 2011, we have 187 secondary agricultural education programs and 226 teachers of agriculture in Minnesota. A common misperception is that ag ed programs around the state are declining and have been that way since the 80s, and I am here to tell you that that is absolutely false. We've actually had an increase. Usually for every program, if we do lose one, we gain one or two. And so we're very happy to report that we have a very steady enrollment, actually nationwide, highest enrollment in FFA ever recorded. So we're very proud of that. And post-secondary-wise, we have about 90 students enrolled in agricultural education to be teachers and also go into business, and they can study at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities or Crookston, at Ridgewater College in Willmar, or South Central College in North Mankato. And I also just wanted to talk to you about another aspect of agricultural education that we often overlook, and that's farm business management. These are adult farm management educators. We have approximately 75 farm business management instructors across Minnesota that work out of 85 sites and 8 college campuses. They're in the Minsky system. And we have 5 regional deans, and in total, the farm business management educators work with between 3,200 and 3,500 students, which are farmers, large and small farmers. And then also in our Minsky 2-year and 4-year college system, we have anywhere between 1,500 and 1,700 students studying agriculture, whether that's horticulture, forestry, or whatnot. So that's just a quick overview on some numbers. But as you can see, we're a robust group. I think we're a passionate group, and I think you're going to hear that today from everyone. And what our teachers do and what our students do, they just do a wonderful job being able to incorporate agriculture. Like I said before, we had an Ag, Food, and Natural Resource Education Summit. I just wanted to go through briefly our four areas, four pillars of the day, is that AF&R education is a solution to a healthy economy. Second, that AF&R education is a crucial partner for preparing the workforce. Our teachers, whether they're in elementary school, high school, or post-secondary, are preparing students for the workforce. And there's a recent Harvard study that just came out talking about how we do not have enough career and technical education in the secondary level to prepare students for jobs. Also, AF&R education is key to creating positive consumer awareness, which is talking about agricultural literacy. And then finally, AF&R education has a positive impact on student learning. We know for a fact in our classrooms that our students do well, they stay in school, and they achieve a lot on their test scores. So with that, I'm proud to have our state FFA officers come forward, and I will hand it over to them. Kind of just for the committee, what we're doing today is we have a revolving door of people that MLC supports and organizations that MLC has helped fund and support, and so we're going to start off with the Minnesota FFA Association.
Julie, thanks also for that video. Is that available for anybody who would care to use that at a soybean meeting, anything like that?
Mr. Chair and Committee, yes, it is. It is on YouTube. So you can go on YouTube, and it's called One Hungry Planet. You can just do a search for that. So it's available for everyone to use. And I will let you know that it's from BASF. So in case you are working with any chemical companies or whatnot, but BASF put that together. So One Hungry Planet.
Thank you very much. And before we go any further, we have a quorum on hand now. So has Representative Schumacher had a chance to peruse the minutes, and would he move to approve them?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome. Any discussion on the minutes from last week's meeting? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We have more guests this morning. Please identify yourselves for the record and go ahead with your testimony. Thank you for coming.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the record, my name is Jason Trundle, and I'm here representing the Minnesota FFA Association.
Mr. Chairman and fellow committee members, my name is Liz Rabby, and I am here also representing the Minnesota FFA Association.
Today we're just here to talk a little bit about a new program that we began this year within the FFA. It is titled the Ag Literacy Challenge. Also in the corner of the screen you'll see this year our theme is Give to Grow. So looking at continuing to figure out how we as FFA members and supporters can continue to give of ourselves in order to grow that knowledge and grow that next generation of agriculturalists. The goal of our program, the objective, is to increase agricultural awareness and knowledge among people of all ages from various walks of life, including elementary school students, community supporters, and various stakeholders.
Growing up in a rural community, I'm from Trimont, Minnesota, I was surrounded by corn and soybean fields my entire life. I thought that everyone in the world knew where their food comes from and just, you know, it's natural for me. But when I got to the University of Minnesota, where I'm a freshman, I enrolled in a freshman seminar course, which brings students from all across campus, not just the College of Agriculture. And the first day, we sat down, and my professor said, he pulled up a picture on the screen and says, "Does anyone know what this is?" And it was a picture of a combine, and there were only two kids in my class who raised their hand. And I was shocked because, well, that's how I spend my fall afternoon, sitting in the combine with my family. So agricultural literacy is something that we really, really need to focus on these days. We found a statistic from, we learned it at a State Officer Professional Development Day with Minnesota Farm Bureau, and that is that 54% of Minnesotans do not know a farmer or anyone associated with the practice of farming. So with a statistic like that, it's kind of very scary for us who are in agriculture and who support it and want to see it grow and succeed. We also know that we have to feed a hungry world, so promoting our industry and promoting what we love is something that will become very important in the future. Our plan is to focus on bringing agriculture to various audiences through interactive presentations, especially in areas not exposed to agriculture or agricultural education on a daily basis. With this, we can ensure that the positive message of our industry is being portrayed and that the general population has some knowledge base of food, fiber, and natural resource sciences. So if you think back to that previous slide when we spoke of the various people we would like to see agricultural education programs present to, you know, stakeholders in your community who might be local business people, an elementary school classroom in the metropolitan area who has never gotten grasp of the idea that their milk comes from a cow. We have a few rural agricultural We have many rural agricultural education programs. A few are starting in the city, but what we want to see happen is those rural communities really coming to the city, sharing their stories, and helping promote agriculture to all those they encounter.
And another thing we also are noticing is that, at least for myself, I grew up in a rural area, but I didn't actually grow up on a production farm. So we're also seeing members, people, whether that's students, or older, who don't even have an understanding of agriculture, even though they are from a rural area. I accredit my passion for agriculture and my knowledge to the fact that I have an agriculture program at my high school that I was able to participate in. So our goal is, one, as Liz talked about, to really bring that to brand new audiences, but also to continue to focus on people who may be our neighbors who just still don't quite have that grasp. Here's just a couple of examples that we a little bit talked about. Elementary school students, last fall, the Morris Area FFA came into the Twin Cities and presented to two elementary schools, and they used the exploding cheeseburger model. Basically, most students have had a cheeseburger in their life, and breaking that down and kind of figuring out where those parts come from within agriculture is a fun and relatable way for those students. So using those types of things, they also had the chance to bring some animals right onto campus, and to have those students go out and not only see them, potentially touch them, but to really understand their purpose and what they're used for. It's more than simply a petting zoo or understanding or visually seeing those animals, but really what's the whole plan behind it. Other places, Kiwanis Clubs, School Booster. And if you are interested in checking out what Morris FFA did, another YouTube for you, if you go onto YouTube and you just type in Morris MNFFA, a video will pop up kind of explaining that day and what they went through and did. So that's a really neat area to check out if you're interested.
So this is our Minnesota FFA website, and the way we're promoting this agriculture literacy challenge is directly online. We sent out an informational letter to our FFA advisors and agricultural educators at the beginning of the year saying, hey, this is a new program. You might want to check it out. Here's the website. Since we don't always have ag educators who are very hip on technology, we've also been posting a lot of information on this with our Minnesota FFA Facebook page, as well as the blog that the state officers maintain. But if you look at the website page, there's a red circle around what says programs. If you click on that, you can find the Agriculture Literacy Challenge, which holds all the resources that we have put together with the help of Al Withers in Minnesota Ag in the Classroom to really have some curriculum, per se, to bring to the students that you might be educating.
Here's just a really quick example of some of those resources. This is the exploding cheeseburger model that I laid out a little bit or talked about. Within our organization, we also went through and put together, this is kind of a competition, so really quickly, not too in-depth, but basically we put together a number of spreadsheets to continue to go through and document what chapters and what schools are doing, so we have a record and can kind of get an idea of our impact and hopefully see where this program goes down the road. One important thing to keep in mind is this program is brand new this year. We're experimenting with different things. We're trying stuff. So we are looking into the future and going to continue to discuss with our ag instructors at the conference this summer about where this kind of program is going in the future. But here's just some general, basically, what we're looking at tallying, keeping track of data.
We really want to hear FFA members sharing their stories. As Jason and I have sat up here today, we've told you a little bit about our backgrounds, where we come from, but the nearly and over now 9,000 FFA members across the state of Minnesota all have very different agricultural backgrounds, and I think it's very important that we all have the opportunity to share those with everyone we encounter, whether that be from production agriculture like myself, or maybe raising hogs for 4-H like Jason did, as well as all the way up north to the forestry industry. You know, it's all agriculture, and we want to share this message with as many people as we can.
Are there any questions for us about our program or FFA in general?
I don't see any. Thank you for doing a great job, Jason and Liz. And judging by the job you did today, you will do an outstanding job telling agriculture's story as you go out and make your way around the university and around the state. Thank you so much. Representative John Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you leave, and the whole ag education is literacy is awesome, and I know some of the Brainerd kids are here as well, and we're going to hear from some of them, but just the FFA organization, as Representative Anderson alluded to, you become leaders as well, not just about educating about ag, but what, you know, tell us about a few opportunities for you to become leaders in your FFA group, about becoming leaders, and some of the things that you do in your group to inspire and motivate and learn about leadership and then take it to the real world.
Well, I think it goes directly back to
Ms.
the
Robbie,
FFA's
go ahead.
Mission. Oh, sorry. I think it goes directly back to the FFA mission statement, which is FFA makes a positive difference in the lives of students by developing their potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through agricultural education. We work hard every day as state officers and as FFA members to really develop ourselves as the next generation of leaders.
And I also think maybe...
And Mr. Trundle, go ahead.
Sorry. Man, we are
totally... We're new at this.
I'm sorry.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine.
They train us in some things, but not this.
We'll talk to your teachers about that.
Thank you.
Just to throw out a couple of examples, over the summer we actually put on 2-week-long conferences for FFA members around the state. It's focused on 2 different age levels. And at those conferences, one, first of all, we're just trying to have a good time, get kids excited, and really try to figure out and have them find themselves kind of a passion in the direction that they're going. We also facilitate numerous different workshops, whether that's simple things like goal setting to, you know, trying to develop a personal mission statement for your life, and working on public speaking skills and really laying out some of the opportunities within the organization. So that's just a real quick example of some of those things we do, but really promoting kids to kind of take it into their own hands. As with everything in life, it's what you make of it. And our organization is here, and it has many, many doors, and we're here just as kind of motivators and encouragers to try and, you know, involve kids in as much as we can, and hopefully through that they continue to grow, as Liz talked about, and in the future are in positions like yourself or other areas that they really feel passionate about.
We have one more question, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late, and maybe you've covered this, but how many people around this table wore the blue jacket?
Very good. All right. Thank you again, Gordon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
And nobody's ever said I was hip on technology anyway, so that's okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may continue.
Go ahead, Ms. Cash.
As you can see, I love my job. I get to work with these students quite a bit. And this is another student I get to work with. Milsey is housed at the University of Minnesota on the St. Paul campus. So I get the opportunity to work with a lot of students, and I had the opportunity to be an advisor for the Agricultural Education Club. And I'm happy to have here on our next level is I'll have Mr. Kari introduce himself, but he's a former 4-H'er and who is now going to school to be an agricultural education instructor. And he's here to talk to you about what they're doing at the University of Minnesota to help educate the University of Minnesota students, faculty, and staff.
Go ahead, Mr. Kari.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
And introduce members. Yourself, please, for the record.
Yep. I am Jason Kari, and I'm a junior at the University of Minnesota majoring in agricultural education. And I'm the president of the Agricultural Education Club and the creator and coordinator of our annual Ag Awareness Day program, which is what I'm going to be talking to you about today. Okay, what is Ag Day? Ag Awareness Day is an event that brings together multiple agricultural, commodity, and industry groups together to educate urban students, faculty, and visitors to the University of Minnesota about where their food comes from. And last spring, we estimated we impacted over 4,000 people and generated approximately 10 to 15 different media stories. Why this event was started? I'm a former state 4-H ambassador, and I got to go to a meeting with a bunch of ag industry representatives and Bob Brunings, and the main topic of discussion that entire time was ag literacy and promoting agriculture to the general public. So I just started thinking about different ways that I could help with that, and the idea came up to have an event on our urban Minneapolis campus to educate students, because not many programs go into the direct urban areas like that. And I have a passion for advocating for agriculture, and something on this scale has never been done before. And then also hearing comments from students in classes or county fairs really fueled my passion for making this event happen. And how this event was planned, it started pretty small. Hey, let's have a couple booths and a couple animals on the Minneapolis campus. And then it kind of exploded into a pretty large event. We had probably 10 to 15 different groups there and live animals right in the middle of Minneapolis. And I had to meet with university officials. There's a lot of paperwork that goes into something like this with using live animals on campus. created probably about 15 to 20 different student committees, a lot of permits, and then publicized to agricultural groups to see which groups wanted to be involved. I had a lot of groups coming to me after a while asking if they could be involved. And then at the very end, doing a lot of media and marketing, and that's why we had so many media hits. We had quite a few news stations there, and then agricultural journals and things from across the state also. Here's a list of different groups that attended, anything from Midwest Dairy Association to 4-H, Minnesota Pork Board, Master Gardeners. We had some llamas out there, which were a really large hit, Beef Council. So we had quite a variety of different groups, and we try to cover every area of agriculture so the visitors to the event could get a broad view of where their food comes from, and we're looking to expand that even more for next year. And here's just some pictures of the event. This is what 6 a.m. on Northrop Mall looks like. There are quite a few people out there very early getting everything set up with different tents and chairs and everything. Here's a couple beef cows that we had out on the plaza there. So we try to have some live animals to give these urban students a chance to see exactly where their hamburger comes from, because a lot of them, again, have no clue. And actually, that cow is making quite a bit of noise, so you could hear her pretty much all over the Minneapolis campus. So people sitting in class were listening to a cow while they're listening to their lectures. Here's another view on the few of the groups and different displays that we had. Here's a picture of the llama that we had out there, and behind her, you can't really see, but she did have about a three-week-old Kriya, which is a baby llama, with her, so that was a big hit. We had the beef man, so we had a couple different students dressing up as him walking around throughout the day. We had Nafaka from the Minnesota Corn Growers walking around also. And then we had a dairy calf out there, and as you can see, the media really liked some of the animals that were out there, so that was great to get some publicity that way. We had a pig out there also. And then here's a group of some of the volunteers and helpers at the event. And we probably had about 50 different student volunteers. A lot of them are sitting in this room over there, and without everyone's help, this event never would have happened. And then here's a picture of the whole kind of broad view right in front of Northrop Auditorium. Okay, and then a look into this next year coming up. We're looking to expand the event to make it even more diversified. We have the Minnesota Buffalo Association that's coming. We have a market rabbit group that's coming also. We're just trying to get as many diversified areas as possible. We are moving the location to Church Street, which is a pedestrian-only street right next to Northrop. And that's because Northrop Plaza, we had to walk upstairs with all the animals to bring everything up. So it didn't work too well. And this will also give us some more space to allow groups to bring some bigger displays. Increase marketing and media reports so we can hopefully get as much publicity as possible. And if you want to jot down the date, it is April 19th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I encourage anyone to come visit the event. Hopefully we'll have some articles and newspapers and things before the event to kind of remind everyone. And I had some comments that people would really like to bring their families, so hopefully we'll get the word out before the event. And then some other impacts about this event. I have been contacted by students at the University of Tennessee Martin to create an event down there also. A government official from Manitoba, Canada emailed me this summer, and they found our Facebook page, and they want to do a similar event also. And then I was also contacted by the Rosemount Research and Outreach Center open house for some ideas for their activities also. And then the U of M open house in Waseca too. So this event has kind of been spreading around the country and in Canada also. So it's pretty exciting to see what this event has done. Does anyone have any questions for me? And I also have my contact information there if anyone needs to contact me for anything.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Carey, for that presentation. Funding for the program, did it come from the sponsors? Did they put it all together, or did you have to, you know, request funding anywhere else?
Mr. Carey.
Representative, we did get a grant from MELSI, actually. They were our main funder last year. And then we also got a grant from CHS, and then some small grants from, like, the St. Paul Student Board, things like that. And then this year we have sent out sponsorship requests to multiple industry groups around the state. And then we're also going to be sending sponsorship requests to the groups participating if they would like to help financially also.
Thanks. Any other questions? Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that you made the comment about connecting people with the food that they consume, and I wasn't sure if you talked at all about the distance that the average food item travels before it gets from the farmer to the person's plate. I believe that average distance is about 1,800 miles. And as a result, and we learn more about the costs of increased transportation and just, you know, how far removed people are from the food, that there's a strong movement for local foods and for community-supported agriculture and for things like that. So I just hope that you could expand upon maybe some efforts you're doing to kind of focus on more locally sourced foods, or just to help people realize that much of the food they consume travels a great distance.
Ms. Kakari.
Representative, I have requested some local, like Minnesota Grown. I sent them an email to see if they would be interested in participating. So we are trying to get some groups at the event that will be able to promote that part of the industry and kind of the local food movement in that way.
Thanks, Mr. Kari.
Thank you.
Hope you get some extra credit for that big project you've taken on. We have a full agenda, so next up is somebody from out in my area of the state.
Mr. Chair, may I continue? Right now, I'm going to have, actually, to save on time, I'm going to have all three of our ag teachers come up here. First, we have Morris, Sibley East, and also Brainerd, and I will get out of your way here shortly. But as you can see from our FFA students and then from our college student, we all believe in learning by doing. I don't know if anyone has testified in front of the legislature before, so between 4-H and FFA, we really do learning. We like learning by doing. We're hands-on learners, and that's what we do in our high school and college ag programs. So I'm going to turn it over to our three absolutely wonderful agricultural education teachers to talk about their programs.
And thanks so much for being here, and as you testify, please introduce yourselves for the record as you start. Welcome.
For the record, my name is Natasha Mortensen from the Morris Area High School, and Mr. Chairman and representatives, I am pleased to be here today to share with you about my program in Morris. And I'm going to be talking mostly today about the literacy efforts that we do in Morris. It is a huge thing that my kids are super passionate about. They really feel like they need to get out and tell people the story, since we do come from a very production county. This is my kids. And we had about 90 FFA members last year in Morris. We graduate about that in a class. So about a quarter of 9th through 12th graders are FFA members, and which is really exciting for me to have that many kids who are passionate about that. First, I want to talk about ag literacy as agriculture education, food and natural resources. Teaching is the ultimate learning. And we all know that when you teach it, you remember it, you understand it much better. So for me, I want to teach the kids things that they can go and teach other people. So I have some pictures here of us in class doing things, and as you can tell, it doesn't look very much like a classroom, does it? It looks very fun, hands-on, and that's what Ag Ed is. So Ag Ed in the schools is the root of all ag literacy as far as our students go. Here is the kids working again. We do everything from solar to wind energy, floral design. We just built a greenhouse. We're going to be producing food for our cafeteria. My kids forage in my ag management class for local foods to bring into our cafeteria. So they contact Minnesota farmers that are raising things to bring in. So my students are working very hard to try to make agriculture prevalent in our community. Here again, everything is an extension of the classroom in agriculture education, and it's essential for the ag literacy that we're bringing these students and raising them up so that they can be advocates for what agriculture is. And so what we're teaching them in the classroom is really important to that. One big thing for our students is we have a Career in Tech Ed Night in Morris every year, and this year I think we had 60-plus booths of colleges, businesses, where students can learn what their options are in agriculture and other areas in the state to work in. And so they know what's out there for them. And for me, the education of my students is the root of what I can expect them to do. So when I want them to go out and teach other people about agriculture, they first need to be educated. We did an Ag Day for daycare at our county fair this year, and all the daycares were invited in to our kitty barn, which is our FFA barn at the county fair. And we did, the city bus picked them up, brought them to the fairgrounds, and they got to come in and learn about lots of different commodities. They got to plant some corn and soybeans. They got to see the animals. They got to understand where their food comes from. They got to milk a cow, and the kids loved that. They thought that was super cool. So as you can see, this little boy right here just killed me looking at that udder. This is so funny. Just like, wow, I've never been that close to a cow. We also do a PALS program with our elementary school students. All of the first graders in our school get egg in the classroom once a month. So we choose a different commodity every month, and we present to them, and the kids work with them in small groups, as you can see, teaching them about that commodity. They do little lab activities. They learn about what kind of products come from those commodities so that they understand the food on their plate and how it got there. We try to relate as much as we can to what they see in town when they drive by the local elevator or they're driving in the country, what they see there, and then how that gets to their plate and what has to happen to it for that to happen. Okay, here's their little cow, their herd of cows. We even ear tagged them. It's pretty cool. Had the ear tagger and everything.
That hurts though, doesn't it?
Yeah. And they just loved it. They thought it was great. Okay, we dress like a farmer, and they have to get the farmer clothes on and do relays. As you can see, the students are hands-on with them. I have about 40 students that work with all the first graders. So they work in groups to teach about groups of 10 first graders, and they do such a great job, and they're so passionate about what they do and teaching them the correct things about agriculture. Here's some more pictures showing them livestock, showing them how to act around livestock for safety reasons, and machines and all those sorts of things. We try to prepare them for a future, just understanding what is on a farm, even if they've never been there. And I live in Morris, and if you've ever been to Morris, very rural. It's a very rural area. However, we do have a lot with the University of Minnesota Morris. We have a very diverse community of people that don't necessarily understand it at all. And that's something that we're starting a new project this year that I'll talk about in a bit. Our local commodity groups came to us last year, and they said, you know, we're really concerned about what's happening. You know, we have all these groups out there that, you know, doing things in government to stop certain things from happening in our production facilities. You know, we want to make sure that we're putting the information out too. We want to make sure they understand what we do and that we are really committed to providing a safe product for people. And I said, okay, well, what do you want us to do? And they said, well, we think your kids should go to Minneapolis and teach the kids there about agriculture. I said, okay. So we loaded them up, and we headed to Minneapolis, and we went to two elementary schools. I worked very closely with Al Withers of Minnesota Ag in the Classroom to set up those schools and to train my kids to be able to teach in that kind of a setting. And the fact that we have had a program with the first graders for, I think, 8 years was huge. I mean, they're very used to this sort of thing, so it was easy for them to transition into teaching in the cities. They were very excited about it. They're extremely passionate about sharing the story of agriculture. They brought in livestock, as you heard earlier, the egg literacy campaign this year that the Minnesota FFA is doing, talked about it as well. But we brought livestock in. The kids loved that. We're very serious about bringing in larger livestock, not so much the young livestock. We want them to understand what they actually look like when they're market weight. So we did have some sheep there, obviously, but we had a beef heifer that was large, and you know, so they could see what they looked like, because they get so used to the little calves and piglets and things like that. So we wanted them to understand that. My students taught them in the classroom, and then after that, they would go out and see the animals. They did labs such as they made pig snouts out of ketchup cups, and they got to put a corn and a soybean seed in a bag and bring it home. And we gave them a little chart to fill out what happens to their corn and soybeans. And then we talked about where the products come from. We used the cheeseburger, like they said earlier, and all the parts of that cheeseburger so they could figure out, you know, where did that come from? And that they understand that. What I learned in this whole journey of Egg in the Classroom is that a lot of kids kind of know. They kind of get it, but they don't think about it. You know, they may know that cow comes from milk, but do they think about the cow and think about where the cow is and think about how the milk came out of the cow? Not really. So there may be kids who get that milk comes from a cow, but do they really know how it all works, and should they? I feel if they're going to drink or eat something, they should probably understand that. So my kids took that, and they made that real for those students. Okay, they got to have lots of fun. The kids really dug everything. They got the oink booth ears and the ketchup cup snouts on. They're pretty cute. Okay, they made really good relationships with the kids, and they ate lunch with them at the school, and they thought that was pretty neat. For my kids, they got to work with the press. We had Carol Sender from AgriNews actually rode with us on the bus, and she did a story on the kids and what they did that day, so it was pretty exciting. Something that is new to Ag Literacy in our community is our FFA alumni this year is actually going to do a breakfast on the farm for freshmen. They're going to try to do a breakfast on the farm for freshman orientation at the U of M, which will be a very interesting project in our community, provided those college students come from everywhere. And a lot of them have very little background in agriculture. And since they're going to live in Morris, we thought we would invite them out and teach them a little bit about where their food comes from, too. So egg literacy is something that is very big in Morris. We have a lot of support from our local commodity groups and local organizations and businesses in our town, which is essential to the success of egg literacy, as well as the support of MailC. MailC has I've gotten a lot of grants that have helped me do what I do in my classroom, which has in turn made students that have leadership abilities and are able to go, 40 of them, to Minneapolis and teach two schools full of kids in a day. That is something that I don't think every kid can do, but I think Ag Ed kids can. And I think that FFA gets them ready to do things like that. And if you think about the opportunities those students that do that are going to have in the future, if they can do that in high school, think what they can do in college. Just telling friends about what they know. When they get out into the work world, being part of the groups, the commodity groups that are out there promoting these products. These are the kids in these egg programs and FFA programs that are learning the tools to use forever. So I thank you for allowing us to come here today and for your continued support in educating, inspiring our future leaders, and working to make a difference in agriculture. Are there any questions?
What a great story, Ms. Mortensen, and keep up the good work. Let's go to our other two testifiers up there, and then we'll save questions until all three are finished.
Mr. Chairman and representatives, for the record, my name is Jeff Eppen, and I am an agriculture education instructor at Sibley Schools in Arlington, Green Isle, Gaylord, Minnesota, three small towns put together in the south-central, north of Mankato, just a little bit area of the country. Just to start off a little bit of an introduction, what Natasha testified, talking about all the projects and activities that she's doing, she's showing a very typical agriculture education program in Minnesota, and we have over 200 and some of those throughout the state of Minnesota. Not all of us are doing the exact same things, but some of us are, we oftentimes steal from each other. And what Natasha's doing is what I'm trying to work on with my students. And some of the things that I'm going to show you today, other instructors have contacted us constantly to share information, and we're a very open group, and we just want to spread the word of agricultural literacy throughout the state of Minnesota and really nationwide, because we think it's so important that students understand where their food comes from and how important the agriculture industry is to our state and our local economies and all those kind of things. So, again, thank you for allowing us to testify today. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what we do, one of the projects that we're doing at our school. We have a school that's very similar in size to what Natasha spoke about. We have about 100 students that graduate, and we've got around 100 FFA members in our chapter as well. We're fortunate enough that we have a two-person agricultural program. With only 100 students per grade, we're still able to support and fill up a lot of agricultural classes. So I have a counterpart who's back back home teaching today and allowing me to come up here and testify. His name is Tim Uhlenkamp, and so a lot of what you'll see and hear about today are his thoughts and ideas as well with mine. Two projects that we went on. I'm going to talk to you today a little bit about our school garden that we have started and established, and you're starting to hear more about farm-to-school, school gardens, locally grown food and produce. And I'm also going to talk just briefly about a corn variety trial that kind of works in partnership with our project. The goals that we had for our project, we wanted to provide students with a healthy food source in our school cafeteria, so we are using some of the produce in our actual school lunch program. We wanted to promote food literacy. We wanted to engage students in experiential hands-on learning. We wanted to promote careers in agronomy and plant production. And this is an area that we, as a rural school district with a lot of livestock and crop production in our county, this is an area that, believe it or not, actually a lot of students don't tend to gravitate towards. They tend to gravitate towards the animals. They grow up with pets. They see cows. They tend to think that animal livestock is a great place to go in for the future. And I'm not trying to minimize the importance of that. But so often in our county and in our area where we reside, these careers in agronomy and plant production go unfilled, or at least unfilled by our local students who have great leadership skills, great training in agriculture, but a majority of them, are going towards the animal side of the industry. And we wanted to open their eyes to other options and keep their options open in agronomy and plant production and crop production. So this is a project that I think that was probably our main goal here, as well as all the other goals. But that was kind of our main one, is to open their eyes up to a little bit of what opportunities do they have here at home and locally throughout the state. And we wanted to be a little bit more visible in the community. We also wanted to increase our ability, my ability, and my co-teacher's ability to spend time with these students in the summer months. We really wanted to improve our contact and have this more of being a 12-month contact with them rather than just our 9 months in the summers. And as funding has decreased in our local school districts, some of those areas have tended to be where instructors have lost time with students. And so that's another reason that we wanted to do this. We wanted to come up with a way to secure our employment so we can work with these wonderful young people in the summertime. So we did two projects. One was a school garden, which I'll talk a little bit more about. And we also did a corn variety trial where we did some things. These are actual pictures of our garden. And some pictures on when we're doing harvest this fall in one of my agri-science classes. The school garden, that kind of came to us. We decided that we wanted to plant a one-acre garden. And we looked high and low for some property, and the city of Arlington, which is where our high school is located, came forth and said, we've got an acre of land that is not really being used, and we have to pay someone to mow it every few weeks. Why don't you take it over, take control of it? So we did. Most of our ag classes, even our students in welding, our students in small engines, we brought out here because we felt from an ag literacy standpoint that was very important, that even though they may go into welding someday, they may go into engines, they may go into floriculture someday, we wanted to expose them to plant growth, crop production, and more importantly, locally grown food and healthy choices. So we brought even some of our classes out there just for a day or two just to experience what we were doing. And all the produce that we raised in that one-acre garden was actually used in our school lunch program. Our cooks took it. You can see a picture of our cooks, as our superintendent refers to them as our rock stars at school, because really it was pretty easy to, well, it was easy to grow the food and harvest it. More importantly, we had to convince our kitchen food service to be on board with it as well, and they jumped at the chance, and our superintendent tells a story where he knew he had them when they were bringing in one day. He caught them bringing in their old church cookbooks to find recipes, and that was awesome. So, and the students loved the food. There were a lot of comments made about how grandma used to make this, or I have this every time I go to grandma's house, grandpa's house, whatever, and students were really on board with eating the old cucumber salads and some of those kind of things. And the best part about it was fresh food locally grown by our students in their cafeteria, so that was pretty cool. Just some of the plants that we tried a lot of plants this year. It was kind of a test run this year. The ones in red we will replant again. The ones in black we will not. In fact, I gained a little agricultural literacy. I ate my first kohlrabi this year. I never had that. Mom never grew that in the garden growing up. I don't know why. It was pretty good. So we tried a lot of different things. And your typical vegetables we'll do again are your tomatoes and onions and potatoes and your basic staples. But we have to be careful when it comes to storage and the ease of processing. Peas would be wonderful, but our kitchen staff's not real thrilled about shucking a bunch of peas. The green beans, they took and snipped and washed and froze 40 gallons of green beans. We're still actually using some of those, and they said that was a lot of work. They said don't plant quite as many green beans, but we're going to. The kids love them. We're going to do it. I know, we're easy. So to tie to this, we are incorporating curriculum into our everyday ag classes around this project. And in my agri science class, in a couple of Mr. Uhlenkamp's classes, we're talking more about crops, soil, pest management, laying out of gardens. We actually get in the soil. The kids do some tilling. We've got a tractor they use to plow and till the soil. They get out, lay out things. They're measuring. They are planting. They're paying close attention to planting depth. We're doing some germination counts. We're doing all kinds of things that really we can talk about in class, but it really starts to take hold when we actually get out and do it. You know, we can talk and talk and talk about how to give a shot to a calf, but unless we actually get out there and get our hands on it, that's when it sticks. And so that's what we're really excited about in our ag program, is these students really are grabbing onto it because of the hands-on. In the summertime, we meet every day, or at least every other day, to cover pest management. We talk about watering, production, insects, all kinds of different things that are going on in the garden at different times. If you've ever grown a garden, you know that there are things that just all of a sudden pop up. And so it's a great problem-solving activity for those kids to work through and come up with some thoughts on how to handle some of the issues that came up.
Excuse me, Mr. Rupp, and have a question from Representative Poppy.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, since you meet in the summertime, are you a year-round school, or how do you actually, that's a lot of commitment on your behalf to be there to provide some guidance to the students?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Mr.
We do get paid a little bit in the summer, Mr. Uhlenkamp and myself. It's not, we get about 10 days paid in the summer. Some of that is volunteer time on our own, of course. Obviously, we feel it's important. And the students that we had in the summer, of course, we had less students in the summer, but we still had anywhere from 20 to 30 different students who participated, with a core group of really 10 dedicated FFA members and ag students that really spent a lot of time in our garden this summer. And I'll talk briefly at the end about what our plans are for the future, and I'll explain a little bit more to help answer your question in a bit. And then also in the fall semesters, we're harvesting out there each day or every other day, taking different groups of students out there. And we're also planning to expand this into our junior high and elementary classrooms as well, to really broaden that agri-literacy topic, not just with our high school members, but to really make it school-wide. We also did a corn variety trial where we rented 7 acres of land from a local farmer. We planted 26 different varieties of corn. And we had students out there helping to plant that. We had a student bring in his tractor and corn planter. And we planted one afternoon. We set up the trial. And basically, I like to kind of model it after a science experiment. So it really fits in well with my agri science class. We're really focusing on science topics. And we did some prediction of yields before we harvested. We did some moisture testing, determined bushel weight, marketed the corn. You can see there's a picture of some kids out there on harvest day that are doing some moisture tests, they're doing some bushel weights, they recorded it all on a laptop, they put it in a spreadsheet to determine actual bushels per acre and all those kinds of things. This information was then given to our Sibley County corn and soybean growers and was also used in the state corn growers variety trial packets that come out every year for those farmers that take a look at those. Changes that we're planning for our crop programs that we're running here at Sibley East, we are planning to establish a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. I think one of the representatives referred to that a little bit earlier. We're going to try and sell some shares out of a 1 or 2 acre area, and hopefully that'll help do some financing, which will lead to some student employment opportunities in our program. We're going to expand our garden from 1 to about 4 or 5 acres. We're planning to hire some students this year, as well as still ask for some volunteer time from our FFA members. But we're planning to hire some of our students as well, and hopefully that can be financed through having some income from a community-supported agriculture program. We're going to offer garden space to elementary classrooms, and we've got some elementary teachers that are really excited about incorporating that into their science units, especially when they're talking about biology and seeds and those kind of things. Our FACS courses, Family and Consumer Science classes, used to be called Home Ec for those of you that remember back in the day. They're going to use as much produce as we're willing to give them. It's going to save on their budget items of spending money at the grocery store. And they're actually going to go back and hopefully do some of the old, maybe some canning instructions and some of those ways we used to preserve food. And hopefully that will improve our also in our another career and technical education area. hopefully give them some more fuel for the fire there too. We're planning to do a little more soil testing and use of agronomy professionals in our classrooms to come in and speak, actually go out and do some soil testing with our students, and then coming in and evaluating those. And we've got several that have already volunteered time and say, hey, we'd love to teach your students about crop production, plant production, soil, fertility, nutrients, all those kind of things. We had a lot of partners in our program. One of the important one was with Julie and Mailsey, did provide us with some funding last year to get this program off and running, and hopefully we'll be using some of that money we earned from our corn sales, and also if we do a CSA, how we'll hopefully be able to make this sort of a continual cycle that'll at least fund itself. We're not trying to make money on it, obviously, we're just trying to break even, and or even just lose a little bit. My superintendent's really good, and he's okay with us losing a little bit of money as long as we're doing some really good education. And so that's great. We have that support from our administrators and just some other really critical people there that we worked with. And to kind of finish up here, from a student's perspective, Mr. Uhlenkamp and I interviewed our students at the end of the growing season last fall, and this was some of the comments that we heard over and over from students. We heard that it was hard work, which we think that's good. We gained a lot of knowledge, which was a very good supportive statement we heard from several students. And one that we were surprised was they said it was very social. As our students, you know, continue to communicate daily by pushing buttons, their hands were full. And they couldn't communicate with their phone. They had to communicate, hey, how's it going? What'd you do last night? As they're going down the rows, as they're weeding, pulling weeds and watering, and as they're harvesting. So they said it was very social. Not an outcome that we expected, but one we were glad to hear. They said it was fun and awesome project, and they said it was really cool to see what we grew in the lunch line at school. So, and there's some contact information if anybody needs any more information from me, but we've had lots of different schools from around the state contact us wanting to know what to do and how we started, because they want to do similar things. And that's, like I said earlier, that's the great thing about ag instructors, is we're willing to share and beg, borrow, steal, and everything else from each other, because we really want to improve the ag literacy of all of the students in Minnesota. So they know where their food comes from, how to make healthy choices, and opportunities they have for future careers in the state.
Another great program, Mr. Reppin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving along, next testifier, identify yourself for the record. Please, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Denise Reeser from Brainerd. Glad to be here. I gave you a handout, I think, out there about our first program that we had in Brainerd. When you think about Brainerd, you probably think, what kind of ag is in Brainerd? And there might not be much there, but lakes and trees, and I vacation there occasionally maybe, or something like that. But there actually is a lot of niche agriculture in our area, and we had the only school farm of its kind in our state. And since then, it has been closed due to budget cuts. But I do want to highlight that Representative Ward asked me to talk about the school farm a little bit. We changed the name to the Brainerd Community Ag Center because, like the other two teachers that just talked this morning, we're all about ag literacy, educating the community and the school about agriculture. And there are some really active efforts. We have a really active alumni group, like a booster alumni group in our area that has formed due to budget cuts up in our area. And there are some very active efforts to reopen the Ag Center today. So it may look a little different than what it has in the past, but we have some really active efforts ongoing. Community gardens, community-supported agriculture, but it's all centered around educating the public and the community about agriculture. So some of the things that we had there, it was an 80-acre facility. We had three instructors teaching. We had 600 students serve there at that time, and there is a lot of interest. Our alumni group came together and supported this effort, and we're now kind of a clearinghouse for all types of people. Keep coming to us with more and more ideas about what can be done. Can we have a community garden? Can we do this? Can we do that? And Representative Ward is on that group and has really been instrumental in helping us out, thinking of all these ideas, but there's just not enough time in the day for all of them. But I just thought that would be really nice to share with you as well. At that time, our curriculum had as you can see, had a pretty wide variety. We did teach animal science. We had animals and livestock, horses. We had a really active ag mechanics program, that type of thing, and we want to bring that back again. But we have transitioned into our program now is in part of the main high school, and we now have one instructor. So the budget cuts, I just like to thank you for the support. But one of our programs, we are very integrated into the school with all of my classes count as science credits, and they mentioned teaching science. But sometimes those types of programs cost more money, and we're really very effective at trying to utilize grants and that kind of thing. And that's why MEALC is so important to our programs and other support from commodity groups and alumni groups, because our curriculum can cost more money with more facilities. Today we're really active. I brought two students with me today that are very active, and we're starting an aqua tanks project where we're going to raise fish as our livestock now, and we do have an active greenhouse right now as well. And so I would echo what my fellow teacher said about really having an active classroom, and in one day I can teach greenhouse all the way to small animals, to equine science, to who knows what in my ninth grade introduction agriculture class, and then I end with a college in the school's intro to animal science through the University of Minnesota. So that's what I do right now in a day. So we're kind of a jack of all trades, master of none is what I say, but we try. So, but we have a lot of different programs similar to what these teachers have already talked about. We have a really active farm tours program at our Crow Wing County Fairgrounds. We used to have it at the farm, and now we have it at the Crow Wing County Fairgrounds. We have a really active partnership. That's one thing in our community. We have a lot of partnerships within the community, and I think ag is just a natural fit to create those partnerships. We have a really active PALS program, like Natasha mentioned. We have a really large school. We graduate like around 500 students in a grade each year, and so we partner with one third grade classroom and feel that we can really take those kids and really mentor one-on-one with them. So our program is set up a little bit differently. We also have a kitty barn at the Crow Wing County Fair, and we serve a lot of groups through our fair. Our fair is like the fifth largest fair, I believe, in the state, so we have pretty active fair. And one of the programs, I'll show you a picture in a minute here, is the Kids Country. If you're familiar with at the State Fair, I think it's called Little Farmhands exhibit. We had a group of parents and our alumni that really wanted to bring that to Brainerd and really felt a need to get these kids exposed to what goes on in the farm, and just like these guys have already mentioned, where they're the fork to, what is it, the food to fork concept that we always talk about. And so we wanted to let them be little farmhands, and we just call it Kids Country. And so they go through, and they put on an apron, and they get a little basket. Has anybody been in the little farmhands before? I don't know. But they get a basket, and they go through all the different barns, the chickens, and all the way through the tractors. And we don't have a live cow like Natasha had in hers. We have Maggie, the automated milking cow, because she's got to work every day at the fair. So anyway, it gives them a really good concept of at the end they sell their product and they get to get a dollar and they get to buy a healthy snack. So we're tying in the healthy eating as well. And our alumni also has an outreach to our community called the Celebrate Agriculture Picnic. And it's a really great night where we have all of our FFA and ag students there. It is a fundraiser, but we kind of open up and showcase what our students do and invite the community, and it's a great event. We serve the first 500 people with a good chicken dinner, and they have milk, and all the commodities are there and that type of thing. And we invite the community in, and they kind of see what FFA and agriculture is all about, and it's a great event, and you do get a free meal out of the deal, so it's kind of cool. So here's some pictures, our FFA PALS program. Our PALS program has been going on for, I believe, 10 years, and we have gotten many grants from different places, from Al Withers and all those different places, and we're very fortunate to have that. We never believed that our program would be going on this long. We partnered with, at that time, I was a first grade teacher, and every year we're thinking of new ideas. We've been to the Farm Bureau P&E conventions, and they keep giving us new ideas, and it's just kind of blown our minds that this program has gone on this long and been this successful. So it's a layered leadership program as well. Here's our fair, Kitty Barnyard, and throughout the state, I think there are many chapters and ag programs that it's a really popular activity where these students and kids from the community, they get to be up close with the animals. And I don't have a picture of it, but this last year we had an alpaca in our kitty barn, and like you was talking about llamas, one of the speakers, and it was pretty much an eye-opener. We did an upgrade in 2010 as well, upgrading our facilities and adding more farm facts to our site. And then this is our kids' country. It was a huge community partnership. We figured that the project was about $40,000 project, and it was just a bunch of parents and community members coming together and our alumni, and they just said, we want to see if we can do this. And our project is mobile. Our little stations, the little barns that are in, I think like that little barn there, they're on like a fish house frame, so we're hoping to make them mobile. We haven't been anywhere yet, but we're hoping to take the show on the road where we could go different places and set it up for different events. And they can go through, and there's their little baskets where they collect the little wool from the sheep, and they can collect the eggs and drive on the little pedal tractors. And it's very similar to the state fair. We have a pig at ours too, and the new milking cow, and it's just amazing to see the looks on the little kids' faces when they go through, and our FFA kids are very active in organizing the event. So that's pretty much what we do in Brainerd, and if there's any questions.
Thanks, Ms. Reeser. We have a question from Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Evan, I want to thank you. I had a student in my class at Gustavus who is a former student of yours, and he did his project on ag education and created a video and talked with students throughout Gustavus about the importance and about knowing where their food comes from, picking up on what Representative Falk was mentioning. So I want to thank you. He did a great job. And I want to ask, if I could, Mr. Chair, the three testifiers just generally, how can we be supportive? I know funding is one issue, but are there other ways in which we can be supportive of your efforts?
And try to keep your answers succinct. We have a time schedule here to keep moving on, so short and concise. Mr. Eppen?
You're asking the wrong one for short and concise. But yeah, there are many different ways that you folks here can help us out. And we're talking about the importance of current technical education for students as they enter higher education or enter the workforce, and how important and critical it is for students that they have some form of current technical education at the high school level before they enter into college or the workforce, so they know what they're getting into. So often than not, Mr. Morrow, you probably see some students that enter your classes that, well, we're going to switch majors 4, 5, 6 times before we graduate. It's because maybe there wasn't enough coursework done to find out what they want to go into. As we start to talk more about the importance of current technical education as a graduation requirement possibly or something along those lines, we think that's really important that you can help say yes. Learning about ag education or any career area is very important to student success for the future, rather than see them go to college for a couple of years and fail out and then restart back up at a new college with a different major and really kind of improve those kind of areas.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Ms. Mortensen.
Mr. Chairman and representatives, I just want to add to that. A lot of the students in our classes and all career and tech ed are learning leadership skills and working skills. So no matter what they do, we hope they find success in it. So we get to focus on those things in our classes, which I think is extremely important for all children, all teenagers, to understand how to be a good worker. And that's something that we do as well as other career and tech ed teachers as well.
Thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be as short as I possibly can. Representative Poppy raised a great point about working in the summer, and I think as these three educators have shown, and everybody in ag, I was at the breakfast this morning, and a local farmer came up and talked to me, and I said, I don't know that I could ever have been a farmer because it's so much hard work, and we all work hard, but you know, it doesn't matter if it's summer or not. I know that Denise works at the Crow Wing County Fair 10 hours a day, 5 days, you know, five straight days, and you give so much. They give so much, and they're great examples of educating our kids and caring about kids no matter what the time frame of that is. Denise and her husband were Egg Educators of the Year not too many years ago, and we're real proud of that, and they do a remarkable job. And it used to be they started their organization, a community organization, and they really reach out to the community. All egg folk really reach out to the community and draw the community in. And when they first started drawing to the community, and it was known as the EAT organization, EAT. And Tom Peterson and I are always going to join something that says EAT with it. But that EAT stood for Education, Agriculture, and Technology. And so they really reach out to the community, and I applaud all of your efforts, so thanks.
Thank you.
Another question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just congratulations and thank you. As public school teachers, oftentimes the public school system gets bashed, and I think you're inspiring and clearly can tell how you teach. So I want to thank you and any other teachers from the public school system. We can't say it enough. The leadership that you provide provides benefit to our state, on and on and on. So thank you, thank you, thank you for the work you do.
I'm sure we all echo those thoughts. Thanks, Representative Hansen. Thank you to you three. Great stories. Keep up the great work, and we'll give you the support that we can.
Thank you
so much. Moving on, we have Mr. Al Withers, the coordinator of the Minnesota Ag in the Classroom. As they make their way down, we also have Farm America coming up ahead, and Minnesota Milk Producers, and dairy research from the Department of Ag. So, Mr. Withers, whenever you are ready, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not Al Withers,
but
I'm here today. My name is Greta Gothier, and I am the new Government Relations Director at the Department of Agriculture, coming in with Commissioner Dave Fredrickson, and happy to be here today and introduce myself to the committee. I do have Mr. Withers with me. He is our Program Director for Ag in the Classroom, And we do have a handout in your packet that has got a blue logo here for Ag in the Classroom, if you wanted to follow along with
the red one.
And it's in this red folder, which has a lot of materials about activities and programs for your later reference. I just want to say that I've heard from lots of ag groups here this morning that are doing amazing things in ag literacy around the state and raising visibility of agriculture. And I want to just kind of give some context that the Department of Agriculture is we're working at a little bit of a different level. Our goal is to try to embed agriculture into the classroom, to equip teachers to make agriculture part of science, math, history, reading, to put it throughout the experience that the child receives while they're going through a typical school day. So just kind of wanted to differentiate a little bit about what we're coming at this whole issue, where we're coming from. Mr. Withers will give you some history here, but I'd like to just point out one fact. I was very impressed by the Sibley East High School program that they have. And just to give you context again, wanted to point out that 95% of the high school students in Minnesota have no access to formal agriculture curriculum. 95%. Anyway, and that's not a number that we're proud of, but it's the reality right now and definitely presents a clear challenge. Mr. Withers,
go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, Al Withers, the Program Director for Ag in the Classroom at the Department. I know we're pressed for time. That's one of the reasons to give you the packet so that you can look at some stuff later. I'm going to tell you a 25-year story in about 5 or 10 minutes here.
Or
you've
even
heard a lot
if you can.
You've heard a lot about Ag in the Classroom. It's really a concept. We are the program at the department, and we're really a formal program throughout the country. So back in the middle 80s, the early 80s, States all across the country established Ag in the Classroom programs. The department became the lead for the program in 1985 and sort of the conduit to bring all of the players in education, agriculture, and business together. Our job, if you look on the back of the front page, we are actually a model public-private partnership in terms of leveraging private money and public money. So I'm at the Department of Agriculture, but in 25 years, we have not had program money, and all of these funders on the back of the first page put money into a foundation so that we can publish good materials for teachers. Speaking of materials, very quickly in the packet, our AgMag series has been around 25 years now. And as you look on the third page of our document, we've made a real impact across K-12 education. Anoka Hennepin schools use the AgMag in all of their fourth grade classrooms. Owatonna uses it in every sixth grade classroom. Farmington is using it in fifth grade. And so we've had staying power over 25 years, which I think is vitally important to get the K-12 system on board and to rely on our materials. 2 years ago, we started an AgMag Junior at the request of primary teachers. We started an AgMag Junior series for first grade. In many cases, they study their community at first grade, and so that project is also taking off. And another unique product that we do, we've done three revisions since 1997 with the Minnesota Alliance for Geographic Education. So this is all written by teachers, for teachers, connecting agriculture, geography, and your community. And you'll notice there's a full-color, two-sided desk map for the kids. And this is all about mapping and integrating agriculture into geography. And actually, all of those lessons are connected to the geographic academic standards, which is also very important for our program. As was mentioned, our whole job is infusion. Most of my colleagues, or many of my colleagues, have teacher educators on board. Right now we don't, but we think two-pronged. We need to provide good quality educational materials for the teacher. These are teachers that don't know agriculture. We need to get it in the context of what they're already teaching, and we need to make them comfortable with the subject. And then the other phase is training teachers. As you know, most elementary teachers are not from the farm anymore, and we need to help them better understand the subject of agriculture and also how they can integrate it into their classroom. Last but not least, our market is very, very wide. On the second page, I mentioned principals, ag producer volunteers going into schools, K-12 teachers, alternative charter schools. I just sent materials to the Battle Lake Nursing Home for placemats so that the elder people can learn a little bit more about, or reminisce a little bit about, their own agriculture. On the second and third page, it shows our numbers. The AgMag's in about 520 schools. The AgMag Junior, we're working with about 300 schools and growing that market. None of our materials are sent out willy-nilly. They're all by request. And so that's the market that we've built over the years. And with that, I guess I would just say I really appreciate the other speakers today, working more and more with ag literacy, and I commend this committee for having a hearing on ag literacy.
Thank you, Mr. Withers, and also to you, Ms. Grothier. And any questions? Just a great program, that the ag literacy in the classroom, ag in the classroom. Questions? If not, thank you very much. We have at least three presenters left in about 20 minutes, so we can do the math. Coming up now, Jim Gibson, the executive director from Farm America. Mr. Gibson, welcome to our committee, and please state your name.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jim Gibson. I'm the executive director at Farm America in Waseca. It's Minnesota's Agricultural Interpreting Center, as you know, has existed by an act of the legislature in 1978. So this session today about agricultural literacy, probably the question is, how is Farm America about agricultural literacy? Well, why isn't it? It is. In the packet that you have, there are some background materials that you can read at your leisure, and actually some videos, and I'm not sure that we'll have time to show the 2.5-hour video, will we?
2.5 minutes.
We actually have a minute and 45 seconds. We're ready for that. But you'll see members of our board of directors, the most recent newsletter and a brochure. I'd like to have you also recognize in the room Mr. Greg Bartz, who's chairman of our legislative committee, and Mr. Tom Haggerty, who are also members of the board of directors at Farm America. So some of you recognize those gentlemen and lots of friends in the room. The principal thing that I would have you get out of this paper that's also in that is that agricultural literacy, to me, is about attitude. Certainly it's about content and it's about knowledge, but largely it's about attitude. So what I think I heard from the presenters before, Mr. Chairman, was attitude as well as content, a vehicle for generating a new plan. I did work for National FFA Foundation, and during the time I spent there, we had a corporate meeting asking the question of corporate leaders from all across the country, what do you want out of agricultural education? And the kinds of things that they listed were, well, teamwork and getting to work on time and, you know, those things. Well, the question was asked of them, then you can really get that out of other places. What do you want us in agricultural education to really do? To create an interest in us, to create an interest in our business. So Farm America has a role in that same way to help create interest. At third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, that's where our principal, our flagship program, our school tours program, does, is create an interest. Certainly some knowledge, and certainly a lot about agricultural literacy, not only the historical experience in Minnesota with the 1850 settlement farm and the Time Lane Road and the rural church and the 1930s farmstead, but also it is about attitude that's characterized by the people that are providing that instruction. About 60 volunteers help us deliver that program in the spring and in the fall, out of about 200 that help us with a variety of things. The sheriff, some of you that are from Waseca County, probably know Mert Schwartz. Mert's 93. Mert can't hear well, so chatter around him doesn't bother a bit. But he says, you know, Jim, I do this because I believe that someplace down the road, kids are going to listen again, listen more intently about food, where it's comes from, about their families, their lives, and yes, about their careers. So this is very much a part of the fabric, I think, Mr. Chairman, of agriculture and agricultural education. We, too, depend a lot on agricultural literacy materials provided by Agriculture in the Classroom and Mr. Withers that was just here, and a lot of industry organizations, corn growers and others, for materials. The heart of it all, though, is about attitude. If I were to give you some suggestions, I would follow the bold steps that our own board of directors has set that they'd like to pursue to make this life work. This board is committed to expanding its partnerships with trade and other organizations, growing its partnerships with educational and youth organizations, because it's broader than what we've seen here today, but certainly is what we've seen here today. Corporate leaders all across the state. This is a very important state for agriculture and for the food industry and the natural resources systems. Summer programming is exactly right when we talk about the opportunities we have in education. And guess we have a 120-acre farm that we can do that on all summer long, and we do. And hosting premier or events and forums. When young people milk a nanny goat or a cow, and hold the baby goats during their school tour time. Summer events are in the fall when they see corn and field crops and farm gardens and livestock and touch them under the wonderful tutelage of experienced interpreters. The distance between themselves and the sufficiency of safe, affordable, nutritious food and agriculture begins to diminish. We too know, even in our rural communities, those that come to us, you ask how many kids, and with their parents, there's about a ratio of 10 to 1 parents and kids and chaperones. How many of you kids actually have grown up on the farm? Out of 200 in the room, we'll get maybe 3, and that's from a rural area, right? From New Ulm to Rochester, Hutchinson, Albert Lee. We asked our parents and teachers, well, we'll get a few more. It's the distance is huge, and it's widening every year. And so all of these opportunities that you've heard today are very important components of this whole mission that we have, I think, together, to assure that this industry is strong in the future and is supported by the general public. So perhaps new interests develop. Perhaps the next time these students will be smarter and even more inquisitive about that which so many of us take for granted, food and fuel, and the continuing stewardship of the land, our natural resources. So important. Now, I do have a 1 minute and 45 second video, but I think maybe I ought to get out of your way and let the next folks visit. But we do have copies of it here if you'd like to take it home. Mr. Chairman, are there questions?
Thank you much for your presentation. Representative Kath.
Well, I would just like to take this opportunity to thank Mr. Gibson for being here, Mr. Chair, and members. I have the opportunity to have this just right outside my district and a lot of members within my district who attend this, including my family. And I think that's what's critical here is that we do understand that as we are maybe geographically moving away from the farm, different families are, we can always come to the farm and recognize our roots and educate ourselves. And Farm America is doing that in our area. And in southern Minnesota, this really is an integral part of educating our kids about ag literacy, and I thank you guys for your work.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gibson, for coming. I see on the front of your brochure there's a team of workhorses pulling a sled there or some kind of a, maybe it's just a, I don't know if it's a contest or whatever, but I'm just wondering, do they ever get into the idea of horses being an industry, a part of the agricultural as far as your literacy and teaching? Because I can remember on the farm, my grandfather used to plow and plant and stuff with the horses.
Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, how many sets of harness would you like? Because we have a lot of them, and fly nets and the whole thing, and it's a very important part of it. We cannot have all of the livestock that we would like to be able to represent. We have the facilities that we use for them. But all of the time we have a one-way street because we don't have our own internal herds and flocks. So we do buy and we do feed and we do sell at the end of the season. So cows, we have some very thin cows that stay around all year. But horses, it is a part of what we do, and the best example probably is during that fall fair horse pulling contest. But during the agricultural literacy part of it, we certainly talk about what those harnesses were all about. We'll have some examples of the use of horses and oxen in the early days. So, yes, we do as much as we can with the time that we have.
Thanks, Mr. Gibson.
Thank you.
Okay. And again, that the DVD is available with the pages in the back, and thank you for that very much.
Thank you.
Next up, Pat Luneman, President, Minnesota Milk Producers. Welcome on Dairy Day on the Hill, Mr. Luneman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patrick Luneman, President of Minnesota Milk Producers and Todd County Dairy Farmer. Before I get started, there's a cooler over here, courtesy of Dairy Farmers and Camps, which is for you. It was supposed to be for a break, but take one on your way out, and it's available to everyone in the room. So I want to give you a brief overview of our industry. Right now, the last count was 4,475 dairy farms in Minnesota, just under 500,000 cows. A reminder that each cow in Minnesota provides $25,000 of economic activity. So if you think about that, you'll realize how important cows are to our state. In the last decade, Minnesota cow population has stabilized, and we are actually in a slight uptrend. The last 2 years economically were rather difficult. 2009, costs exceeded revenues. 2010, last year, we were looking at a slight profit for many of our farms. And the milk futures are up significantly in the last month, and we're anticipating a good year in 2011. At least we're cautiously optimistic. Some concerns that we have at Minnesota Milk Producers, the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program, which is administered by the Department of Ag. We feel that this is a critical program that helps small and young producers, and it coordinates industry support. So for each dollar we put into that, there are so many industry people that help out with the program. We know you have budget concerns, but in the last 3 years, the budget's been cut by a third already. And we believe that more cuts will jeopardize the core program. The Livestock Investment Grant Program has been a tremendous investment stimulator in the past. We urge you to keep the program. We know you may not have money to fund it. Consider a tax credit, but for sure keep it so that we can grow our dairy industry in the future. If you can't do it now, at least hold on to the program and figure out what you can for the future. Environmental permitting, MMPA supports streamlining, shortening the timelines, and eliminating the redundancy in regulatory agencies. Board of Soil and Research, which you know as Bowser, ask you to continue outdoor heritage funding to help small to medium-sized producers come into compliance with their feedlots. Because if we don't give them some help, they'll just throw up their hands and close the doors. So we need to keep that program going for them. We ask you to support healthy options in schools, the placement of milk in our school lunch lines, vending machines, and school stores we believe is critical. Flavored milk has come under fire recently and has been taken out of some programs, and we believe that's wrong because instead of the children having something that's not quite perfect with a little sugar added, then they turn to soft drinks in total, and actually we're defeating the purpose of why the milk was flavored in the first place. We would ask you also to consider increasing the milk standards in solids, not fat, in fluid milk in Minnesota. This is something that they do in California, and it makes for a more full-bodied milk. That's something that we can talk about in the future. Access to affordable health care is an issue for dairy farmers and farmers and small business people across Minnesota. It still is a critical issue. The cooperative network has worked for several years trying to come up with a health insurance program for farmers available through their local cooperatives. It's hit roadblock after roadblock. I'm happy to say that today it's at least had preliminary approval here at the state. And if you hear of any roadblocks coming up, please help get this program through to our farmers. And last, Minnesota Milk supports the establishment of a Dairy Research, Teaching, and Consumer Education Center. Since the late 1800s, and I want to go back, Professor Theo Hacker, and there's a hall at the University St. Paul campus named after Theo Hacker, Hacker Hall. Theo did the first feed research with 10 Jersey cows at the University of Minnesota back in the late 1800s. And he took the feeding research that he was able to come up with and the results from that, and he went with horses and a buckboard across Minnesota teaching dairy farmers and county extension agents how we can better our industry. And that was really the invigoration of the dairy industry in Minnesota, with Theo Hacker going across Minnesota. And so what I'm trying to tell you is that the university and the state of Minnesota has a long, colorful history of supporting the dairy industry, and we need to continue that. We at Minnesota Milk believe we're at a crossroads as far as research and teaching is concerned in Minnesota, and we believe we need a facility that will create the next generation research that will lead us to a new plateau in dairy innovation here in Minnesota. And we envision this not as just the state of Minnesota, not the University of Minnesota, but the state, the university, the MINSCU system, and the private industry all put together. And we urge you to support the pre-design funding in the 2011 bonding bill. That will conclude my remarks, Mr. Chair, so that we have a little bit of time for the next person. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
And there is a reception this evening, correct?
That is correct. For the legislators, we have a reception at the Kelly Inn from 4 to 7:30, and you're all welcome to attend. We'd love to have you.
Thanks, Mr. Luneman. Next up, Kurt Zimmerman from the Department of Agriculture. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Zimmerman. I'm a livestock development supervisor at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It's my pleasure to be a very small part of Dairy Day at the Capitol. One of the key stakeholders in our work at the Department of Ag is the work of our dairy industry, which is alive and well thanks to their hard efforts and your support. The theme for today, as I listened to the various presenters, is education opportunities, agriculture, and the importance, and the report that I'm going to give you today is exactly right on that same theme. What I've provided for you is a Reader's Digest version of the full report. This is just a front and back and a introduction and background of the type of work that we were asked to do. Those of you on this committee last year, the wording on the very back page of the handout that I've got talks about what assignment you were we were given at the department. It was my job at the MDA to provide as a facilitator for this group, but we were asked the Commissioner of Agriculture to convene one or more meetings with milk producers, industry stakeholders, representatives of the University of Minnesota, the MinSCU system, anyone really that works in related areas to the dairy industry, to take a look at the need for a dairy research education facility, and then what type of a partnership might work the best as far as providing support for our industry and higher education institutions in our state. We did do that. We did put a group of stakeholders together. Just inside that back page is a list of the acknowledgments of the people that participated in this work since the last legislative session. There's about 40 names, probably 35 or so organizations. We started with about 15, and the support and the interest that we were able to gather on this project drew more and more people in all of the time. We started with a face-to-face a meeting where we just talked about, do we have a general consensus? Is there a need across the state? One of the things the group did, and again back on the back page, is they developed a unified mission statement, and that was to build and support a dairy research, teaching, and consumer education facility that meets the balanced needs of a dynamic dairy industry. And balanced is the key here. We wanted a facility that was able to support dairies of all size and all types of operation within the state. And really that is the key to this, the entire report. And we have that full report available today for the first time. And if you'd like a copy of that full report, we'd be more than happy to provide that for you. It's also will be available effective today on the Department of Ag website. The facility will enable important future research and development to optimize profitable production practices of high-quality milk, ensuring cow comfort, health, and care while benefiting the natural resources and the people of Minnesota. Sounds like a big job, but really, in order for this facility to be effective and do the job we want it to, it's really got to meet all of that criteria. On the inside cover is the executive summary. And your busy schedules are much like today's hearing. You only have so much time. If you have an opportunity, I would really like to have you spend some time and just take a look at the executive summary. And I'll just point out a couple paragraphs, and then I'd answer any questions for you. But the paragraph 2 and the paragraph 4 on the executive summary really says what this report is all about. There are differing views on how Minnesota should strengthen and support our industry. There is a common theme, and it's that we continue to define the plans for this dairy research, consumer education, and outreach facility. So have we come to all the answers? Have we developed exactly how big it should be, what the actual dollars are, and where that piece of ground should be procured? No. We do have the criteria of what type of standards we believe this facility should have as far as meeting some of those needs. Paragraph 4. A public-private operating model that utilizes the strengths of each to keep operating costs in line with sustainable models is essential. I think if we heard one thing, we heard it over and over again, is that we could figure out a way to get this facility built, but how we're going to operate it and how we're going to be able to maintain it and who's going to pay for that in years to come. So a key element is going to be putting together the operating costs of a facility once it's built and how that's going to be operated. This is another important key to the report. The size of the operation remains fluid. We're not exactly sure how big it should be. There are some things, though, that we do agree on. The benefits of the new facility need to balance the needs of all dairy operations. If we build this dairy research facility to only benefit the small or the only the very large, we failed in our mission. So I think that's a key element of what this report is going to say when you get an opportunity to read the entire report. It does need to meet the size and style of productions that are represented across our state. An average dairy facility in Minnesota is around 104 or 105 cows. The facility needs to be large enough to incorporate multiple research projects simultaneously. And why is that? It takes so long for research to be able to benefit an industry that if we have to wait for one project to be wrapped up before we can start another one, it'll take forever before we have meaningful research. So it has to be large enough so we can conduct more than one research project at one time. And it needs to be located within a reasonable distance of a major metropolitan area so we can work with our friends at the university and with the Minsky system. And that is a brief snapshot of what the 18-page report is included. And again, I'd be happy to provide the entire report to you. We put a lot of time and effort into it, and we believe it needs to go to the next steps, which is included on the very bottom page. But it's like Mr. Luneman said, we believe that we need to have that pre-engineering phase, and we look at land availability. We're already getting calls at the department. We have land available. When would you like to come out and look at it? We need to look at siting considerations. Where is the proper place to put it? How can we meet education needs? And with the pre-bonding, pre-designed facility requirements would be part of this pre-bonding requirement. So that is a very quick snapshot. I know you're pressed for time, but I tried to wrap it up as quickly as I could.
Thanks, Mr. Zimmerman. Any questions quickly? We do have two more folks that would like to be on the agenda for just a minute or two. If you have to take off, go ahead. But a couple more people would like to take just a minute. Please hold it to that amount of time. Mr. David Ward from Co-op Network and also Steve Schlangen. So if you want to come down and just offer a minute or two of testimony, we'd certainly be glad to hear you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Ward. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Dairy for the Cooperative Network. We're a trade association that works with cooperatives in the state of Minnesota, and Minnesota is the number one state in the country for cooperative activity. With me is one of our directors, Steve Schlangen, who is a dairy farmer from Albany, Wisconsin. But there's an Albany, Wisconsin, too.
Minnesota.
Albany, Minnesota. And we're here to proudly, we co-direct or co-coordinate Dairy Day at the Capitol along with Minnesota Milk. And the cooperatives in Minnesota were the ones that add the value to the milk produced by the 4,500 dairy producers. And Steve has a few comments, too.
Mr. Schlangen, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us to be here today. My name is Steve Schlangen. Along with my wife, Cheryl, and two teenage sons, we milk about 65 cows on our farm near Albany. We raise our own feed on about 200 acres of land for our cows and our replacement heifers. My milk goes to AMPI in Painesville, which is part of corporate AMPI, which is located in New Ulm, Minnesota. Like David said, I serve on the board of directors for Cooperative Network, and I actually co-chair the two-state dairy committee between Minnesota and Wisconsin. Minnesota is the number one state in the country for cooperative membership, with over 3 million Minnesotans being members of a cooperative. I agree with what Pat was saying earlier, but the Minnesota Milk's position on different dairy initiatives, we support all of them that they have on their agenda. We'd like to thank you for your past support for the Livestock Investment Grant Program, but we know with budget restraints it's going to be hard to find funding for that. As being part of a two-state organization, we can look at what's going on in other states. In Wisconsin, the Cooperative Network has pushed to pass a dairy livestock investment tax credit, and according to their Department of Revenue, over $500 million of expenditures to modernize dairy and livestock facilities and equipment have taken place since the tax credit took effect. The livestock investment tax credit would be more of an incentive, I believe, because it'd be something you could count on as a producer. You'd know you were going to get it. It wouldn't be like a grant that you'd apply for and hopefully hope to get. It would be more of an incentive to modernize and something you know you're going to get, and it would require you to make your investment, which would create jobs as far as carpenters, electricians, plumbers, equipment dealers, and then only the next year would you get the tax credit, which you could carry forward and only use to offset income in future years. There's a lot of farms, dairy farms in Minnesota that are 40 cows or less, and there's a lot of interest in expanding and modernizing. Any incentives you could give would help keep more farms in operation and entice more young people to come back to the farm. With each cow producing $25,000 worth of economic activity for the state each year, and any increases in milk production going to our cooperatives, increasing plant efficiencies and allowing them to produce more products to sell across the country and across the world, this tax incentive could be like planting a crop that our economy would be able to harvest for years to come. Just a small example on our own farm, about 9 months ago we installed a robotic milking system, and it's really changed our lives, and we are producing more milk, higher quality milk, and are spending a lot less time doing chores and a lot more time managing our farms and being involved in the community. Just about everybody I talk to is interested in seeing it, but it is a big investment. In many cases, a little incentive could help make it a doable project for more farms. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thanks, Mr. Schlangen. Are your cows being milked as we speak?
I hope so.
And I knew you weren't a Packer fan either.
It hasn't come, no.
Thank you very much. Meeting's adjourned.